Wait, let me pause for a sec. Does that ship have kidneys? Welcome to The Spinal Frontier, a podcast where we speculate as to why Star Trek aliens are the way they are. I'm Kelly, she, her.
And I'm Aaron, they, them.
So, today we're here in our closet. We're determined to work out these sound issues. But we're in the closet and we're here to wonder about when is a ship not just a ship.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the closet thing. So something that I thought was pretty interesting that we could talk about is bioships, which are ships that are made predominantly or entirely of organic components. The ship that immediately comes to mind when I think about them is the ones used by Species 8472 and Voyager. But there's actually quite a few.
Well, the one that I wonder the most about is Tin Man.
Tin Man.
from TNG. So
yeah.
The ship that is fully sentient and fully organic. So it's not quite a space whale because it is partly a vehicle. Other organisms can ride on it and in it. But yeah, it's not quite the same thing as it just like a big animal in space.
Yeah, and there's actually, like, there's a few examples of bioships that we can talk about. And in my research for this episode, I noticed that they kind of run along a spectrum with, like, more ship-like at one end versus more creature-like at the other end.
And then there's also some honorable mentions, too, and, right?
Yeah, and some honorable mentions.
With, like, some bio parts.
Mm-hmm.
We plan to talk about all of it. I know you're really excited for this episode because you actually like to talk about the ships of Star Trek and we don't get to do it enough.
Yeah.
So then why don't you tell us about this ship side of the spectrum?
Okay. So on the ship side of the spectrum, I mentioned the species 8472 and their bioships. The reason they're kind of on the ship side of the spectrum is because they're ships that are designed and built by this species. And they aren't themselves, like the ships don't make decisions or think for themselves. What's interesting about them is that they share a lot of genetics with their pilots. And so they have the same resistances and advantages and disadvantages that 8472 themselves have. The interior of the ship is gooey. I think that's a notable thing to talk about with some of these. It's gooey. It has meaty walls and like bones for support structure.
Talk about biomimicry, which is when we build artificial things to resemble nature, because that if it already worked through evolutionary design, then we might as well copy it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a very organic looking ship. And then like a big contrast to that are Breen ships, which we only know are bio ships from one line of dialogue in Voyager. Otherwise they look more like ships than they do like creatures.
Well, what did we decide that Breen were? Weren't they didn't we decide they were kind of non-corporeal, like...
We had some ideas about
what
the Breen
ideas
are, but we don't know for sure. I think maybe we thought non-corporeal, kind of like Zero and Prodigy or something.
Yeah, or because nobody knows what Breen look like.
Even though they've taken the suits and worn them.
Yes. Yeah.
And they don't have blood.
Yeah.
That's what we know about them.
So maybe Breen Interceptors are like bio ships in so much as a gas fills its container.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Maybe the bioships are the real Breen, and the Breen that we think we've met are just farts.
No, this is what I think. I think that they are all together in a Breen soup, like a Breen brine, if it were. And they're all kind of together, and then they just kind of fill up a suit, and then they go out and do whatever. But maybe they're like a collective consciousness, like...
Oh, that could be really interesting.
The founders are.
Yeah, that could be neat. They have like a hierarchical structure though, which would be kind of weird for that.
We don't know. Maybe there's something to do with the molecular structure that it's just not obvious to us because, you know, we're flesh. I don't know.
I'm looking pointedly at the Borg Queen here.
And we did talk about the Borg. It's not quite the same thing because Borg are, it's less of a bio ship and more of a robo species or like a mechanical species. That's my first honorable mention here is because since the Borg are so robotic and so mechanical.
But they specifically like have biological components like
that they take and incorporate. Mm-hmm. It's basically a ship that incorporates biological material into drones that it can then send away, but it's still like
And when they're plugged into their alcoves, like each Borg drone is kind of like a brain cell for the ship.
So are Borg cubes bioships then, do we think? Like, I would say so.
I think so too.
Yeah And also considering that, I mean, we already did an episode on the Borg, we don't have to talk about it, but Borg queens specifically have such similar characteristics. They have kind of the same facial kind of sensory dots and stuff, and the same kind of skin tone. So they seem to be a little bit like the assimilation is maybe not just a robo assimilation.
I think the Borg queens are probably cloned,
and they're probably the actual original Borg, and then everything else is just assimilated
idea. That's my fan theory right now.
That's why when we're talking about Picard season 2, which is definitely over now so we can talk about it. Season 3 is coming up in a couple weeks, we're excited. That's why the Borg queens can have some kind of time travel. They're kind of timey-wimey, but no average Borg drone can do that.
There must be something about that species that they make into queens. So we know the Elarians, like Guinan, have a time sense. We're getting off topic though.
So off topic, but
we can talk about Elarians another day.
So if we're getting onto the more creature side of things, I feel, and so I would love to talk about Tin Man. So why don't you tell us about Gom 2, because you have probably seen this episode more recently than me.
Maybe. Okay. So Gom 2 is a space pine cone.
Sentient space pine cone
that lost its crew and was feeling sad and was going like, it was going to end its life when
wasn't going to fly into the sun or something.
It was next to a star and it was about to explode, and it was just sort of waiting. Then the Enterprise encounters it, and there's a Betazoid on the ship that they pick up somewhere, and he feels like a big connection with it because he's telepathic and he can read its thoughts, and he meets up with Gom 2, and Gom 2's happy to have a crew person, and so they go off on adventures together. That's how that episode ends. So it's a happy ending.
That's right. But yeah, it's interesting to have. So this is a full-on organism, what we were talking about before, but it's not in the same way as, like I was saying before, a Gormagander, because it is evolved to have people or organisms inside of it, presumably driving it around. Like what?
Yeah, it's able. So it has corridors, and it's able to sort of rearrange its inside goop to make its crew comfortable. I think that maybe it was probably like engineered in some way. I don't know if this is a natural evolution, because it seems kind of wild, but it is definitely an alien that is sentient and has feelings and thoughts and emotions and can build connections with people.
This seems to be what you get when you lean into my ship's AI has become sentient. That was another one of our honorable mentions. But before we get to that, I looked at a cross section of Tin Man and of Gom 2, excuse me, sorry, Gom 2, wherever you are. It's really cool because it looks it looks very biological. It reminds me kind of a flatworm or some kind of evolutionarily conserved invertebrate, because it has like, there's a head and a tail. There's kind of, there's, it's directional. It's not just like a blob, but it's got a couple of different systems, it looks like. So there's kind of, if you look at the Memory Alpha pictures, there's actually a cross section from the ship's scanning of this thing.
Oh, cool.
And so there's kind of a blue, I'm assuming, central nervous system area. That's where the AI lives, I guess, or the
brain,
whatever the consciousness lives, it comes out of there. And then I see kind of round kind of support structures to kind of keep, I'm sure it changes around, but like to keep kind of the teardrop shape, or what did you call it?
Pine cone.
Yeah. It's kind of pine cone shaped. Yeah, that's fair. There's kind of internal supports, maybe like ribs that are just kind of circular, but it's not a vertebrate. Like there's no spine that runs in between. So it could like, it could crash into stuff and like compress.
Oh, interesting.
Potentially it could kind of squish, and then
hopefully not squish its crew inside.
It seems like there's a bunch of jelly going on. Like there's, it's filled. So like a good jelly donut, as long as it contains its jelly, it's probably not going to compress that. Right.
So we're not talking about a bus transformer full of people.
No. Cause liquid is much harder to compress than gas. So to me, it reminds me of just kind of like some sort of rudimentary circulatory system that they just kind of move lymph through to like oxygenate the tissues. Although I'm guessing that's probably what like the corridors are. That's probably what gets rearranged, and that's what the crew live in, is the, you know, the lymph.
Yeah.
They have to live in that stuff. And then
maybe that's what the crew does, like maybe that's their crew person position, you know, like
circulator.
Yeah, so like a lot of like ships in Star Trek, there's some small amount of automation, but there's still people that have to like go through the corridors and do stuff. Like there's 1,000 people on the Enterprise. What do they do?
This just takes me back to the species, to the species 8472 ships. Like, is somebody's job to like mop the goo, like the goo walls, does the ship need a massage therapist? There's just somebody just like rubbing the wall.
The other thing about species 8472 is that they're from an alternate dimension that's called fluidic space.
Yeah.
And it's just soup. So maybe they just exist in the soup and are filled with soup normally.
I like it when I'm filled with soup normally.
Me too. Yeah.
Yum. Okay. Anyway, so the internal structures of GOM-2 are really interesting to me, just because I see there's like, again, when you look at the scan, it looks like a circulatory system, but then there's kind of other organs that are not lit up in the same way, but they're kind of shaped like the parts of the what looked like the circulatory system. And at first I was like, oh, this is probably like a kidney and liver kind of like waste processing organs potentially, like, but I could also see a world where, like, thinking about is, since they rearrange their corridor system to accommodate crew members, it's potentially just vestigial rooms they just kind of keep ready, so they don't have to grow a new room if the crew expands or something. Or it could be storage or something. They can separate it out from the rest of the lymphatic system, whatever. But GOM-2 is not the only kind of larger space organism one can ride in.
Right.
What else?
So in the pilot episode for The Next Generation, there are these big space jellyfish that the antagonist aliens in that episode had captured one and were using it as a starbase. And it made the space jellyfish unhappy. And it had limited means of communication, though, so it kind of had to come up with some clever ways to tip the crew of the Enterprise off as to what was happening so they could free it. I'm guessing these aliens are probably not designed to be ships. They're just capable of producing things. Like, it's weird. So like they can make corridors and rooms, and they can pop food and clothes and stuff into existence.
Hear me out.
Yeah.
You know what a gall is on a tree?
How do you spell that?
G-A-L-L, gall.
No, I don't know what that is.
Have you ever seen a tree with just a big old lump on it for apparently no reason? Yeah. Do you know what a gall wasp is?
Is it a wasp that lives in the gall?
Yes. Okay. So this wasp bites into the bark of a tree and basically it functionally causes cancer, because cancer is just, what cancer means is just like uncontrolled growth of cells. Okay. And so the wasp causes this immune response in the tree, and so it just grows this big lump. Wow. And so then the wasp can bore into it and live there.
Wow.
So,
well, do you think that's what these aliens were doing?
Yeah, the aliens that are parasitizing the space jelly, and they're possibly like razzing its genetic material and manipulating it to form furniture and whatever, because they're a little more advanced than just like cause an immune response. Mm-hmm. This is like a little more targeted. They clearly have the technology.
Yeah.
Or they potentially have the technology that it's something they could do.
Wow.
So potentially they're taking, because jellyfish mm-hmm. or like, you know, is not very differentiated. The organism itself is not very advanced. So also it makes me uncomfortable to call them jellyfish because they're sea jellies. They're not fish.
Oh, okay.
I'm a marine biologist. But for the sake
space jellies.
Space jellies, for the sake of semantics. So they're probably goosing or maybe modifying the base DNA or adding into the DNA, because that's what and that's what viruses do. Like aliens could be considered a space jelly virus that get in and change the DNA of the jelly in order to make it do this kind of stuff.
That's a really cool take on that.
That's my wild theory, but, you know, what is this show without my wild theories?
So, like, in Lower Decks, we also encounter another one that is growing inside of another Starfleet ship and kind of tears it apart from the inside. So, like, that makes me think that they're not engineered or built.
Or co-evolved. Like they, it's not a mutualism. They're not meant to be interacting with.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so like I think that they're probably more just space creatures that incidentally have been used as ships.
So we have our honorable mentions now.
Okay.
So we talked about Borg vessels already, but we also have some organic material incorporated into the regular function of Federation starships.
Yes, yeah. I think that's it's a pretty interesting direction for the Federation to take, but we first see it in Voyager with its bioneural gel packs. And so what they're doing there is they're using neural fibers, like brain cells, in place of isolinear chips to do their computer processing. And I think they explained that what this does is it allows the computer to make heuristic analyses instead of algorithmic, which means that instead of following a strict set of steps to come to an answer, it's able to make logical leaps and do calculations with a "that looks about right" attitude, which I'm not sure you always want, but it hasn't seemed to be a problem.
It's not a problem for any of the, you know, humanoids in Star Trek, so why hold a ship to a different standard?
Sure, there we go. But it's susceptible to the same things that creatures
disease,
are.
Yeah.
Disease, yeah. There's that episode where Neelix makes it sick with his cheese. Yes, this was a 45-minute episode.
God, how did that person not get shot out of an airlock 100 times? Like, intolerable.
I don't know. I can't answer that.
So the bioneural gel packs are interesting, and we talked about, this is kind of the thing that set off this episode in the first place, was thinking about the bioneural gel packs, because a neuron is such a fast and precise, potentially precise way of sending information through our bodies and so mm-hmm. and through animal bodies, and so that's kind of a natural thing, but it also leads to the complications of like what happens when you have an AI on a ship that also uses mm-hmm. biological neurons to process things and send signals through the ship, because then is your ship still a ship, or did you just like Frankenstein an organism mm-hmm. that you ride around in? Did you just build a Tin Man?
Yeah, and I think that would have been a really interesting episode of Voyager, like the ship gaining sentience or at least displaying signs of it, and what do they do about it? Mm-hmm. I think they didn't do that because they did that in an episode of The Next Generation. But so Voyager is the only Federation ship that we know for sure uses those gel packs, but a thing that I thought was really neat about the set design for Star Trek Picard is that when they built the Stargazer, they built a lot of details into it that we don't see on screen. And one of those things is they're like a hybrid gel pack isolinear chip that the crew called the Tide Pods. Yeah, so I think those are really neat. They're not canon yet, but we might see it in season 3.
Maybe there'll be another episode like that early TNG where Jim Shimoda is stacking the isolinear chips, but instead it'll be
Jim Shimoda's Tide Pod challenge. Eating Tide Pods.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's incredible.
TM, 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 TM. For all five people that listen to me and my ideas.
But yeah, no. So there used to be more information on this on Twitter. But it looks like those posts were taken down. They were posted by one of the art lead, mm-hmm. Dave Blass. So those are gone now. Hard to find, but if you do some Googling, you can still find dead links that go there and people talking about them. So that's neat.
So what do we think is going to happen, or why do we think he did it?
So the spoiler alert, if you consider trailers spoiler worthy, maybe skip ahead a few minutes, but, the new ship in Star Trek Picard season 3 it uses the Stargazer bridge and redresses it for this new ship. So they might have taken down those pages because maybe some of those details will be relevant. Who knows?
Man, maybe the Tide Pod challenge wasn't my idea. So rude.
But and then when we were putting together, when we were doing the research for this, you pointed out something that I totally missed, which was Discovery. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So Discovery is not the traditional bio ship mm-hmm. in that it's not really depending on biological material for processing or other things. But the one thing it does depend on, at least in part, is the spore drive, because mm-hmm. there's a couple of instances, or at least one instance, where when the fungus is dead, they can't use the spore drive mm-hmm. because they can't plug into the mycelial network. And so they need to be able to have the DNA of the fungus, mm-hmm. which I think we talked about before. We talked about that with lichen. Never mind.
Yeah,
because there's no such thing as lichen DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the fungal DNA, they need to have live DNA being transcribed to plug into the mycelial network, whatever.
They also need a like an organic navigator. They couldn't make very long jumps, and that's why they needed the space bear,
because they realized they needed to have something that could process the information mm-hmm. that is in the network in order to make large navigations. The little fungus that they had in the pods in the lab mm-hmm. could only do so much, because they're little microorganisms. But if you use a brain of some sort to be able to process that, then you can go much farther, and that's why Stamets had to take on the fungal DNA.
Yeah. Wow.
We should talk about fungus at some point.
Yeah, there's a lot of information there.
There's a lot of fungus. Yeah.
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 So I think that exhausts the big examples of bioships and using biological components in your ships and computers.
Yeah, but we love a good biomimicry mm-hmm. moment, and we don't love using animals, modifying animals yeah. for transport in that way.
Yeah, there's something about it that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, but it's a pretty significant sci-fi trope in a lot of other sci-fi franchises. Mm-hmm. Star Trek's very light on it, actually.
Which works for me.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I just realized there's one more biological mode of transportation in Star Trek that we haven't talked about.
The Riker maneuver?
What? No, I was just going to talk about Pike's horse, but...
oh, yeah, okay. We can talk about
sure.
it. Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Frakes.
It's amazing.
It's something.
It's certainly, yeah, I don't know.
On that note, I think we should wrap up for the month of January.
Yeah. So if you like this episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and now YouTube.
Beep, 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 beep.
We're adding our back catalog with edited captions for all our Ramatissian fans out there. While you're thinking about it, please rate us and leave us a review so other people can find us. If you didn't like this episode, maybe listen again just to make sure.
If you have excellent taste and can't get enough of us, keep an eye later this month, or it's really any minute now, on the Trexperts Quiz podcast feed to see just how well I did in all of my Star Trek knowledge. I also want to mention that you can follow us on both Tumblr and Instagram at Spinal Frontier Pod. And don't forget the brand new YouTube. At least maybe our sound quality is under control, so baby steps, I guess.
Yeah, so hopefully this episode is doing much better than our previous episodes. For those of you that have been sticking with us, thank you.
Thank you.
And we're working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, honey, you can press play.
So the Riker maneuver is
no.
when you sit in a chair not by turning the chair around and sitting in it or by walking in front of it and putting your butt in it first. You approach it from behind, you lift your leg over it,
and then plop your butt down
in the chair.
Yeah.